We're back, everybody. Kilmeade and Friends. As you know, one of the most intriguing things that I can remember in quite some time is the 2016 election, especially in the GOP side. Yeah, there's some intrigue on the left to see if Joe Biden will get in. But for the most part, I'm just stunned how bad a candidate Governor O'Malley's been and how invisible Senator Jim Webb has been and successful a socialist has been on the left, challenging Hillary Clinton, who cannot seem to get out of her own way. But on the right, there's a lot of intrigue. You have many different people and you have many different policies and beliefs. One person who is more true to his school, as true to his school and his school of thought than anybody out there running, is Senator Rand Paul. Been consistent domestically and internationally. Joining us now, Senator Rand Paul. Senator, thanks so much.
Good morning, Brian. Thanks for having me.
Okay, Senator, well, why has this been so tough for you to register in double figures in this process?
You know, we've been up and down and still continue to do very well when polled against Hillary Clinton. If you look at the independent vote, we actually win the independent vote in five states won by President Obama. So some of it depends on the polls. But I think also the polls are somewhat distorted by celebrity right now. And you've seen wild gyrations. So we consider this to be the beginning of the campaign, not the end. You know, we're organized on 350 college campuses around the country, and we have a lot of staying power and a lot of organization. So we'll see what shakes out over time.
Yeah, I mean, in 08, we watched Rudy Giuliani just implode in Florida, even though he had all the money, momentum, and was leading in the polls. And then we watched Governor Huckabee on a shoestring last all the way to the end and come in a strong second to the eventual nominee, John McCain. Why do you believe that some like Walker have to get out right away, even though he was once leading a short time ago in Iowa, and others are able to stay in?
Well, I don't think Governor Walker had a unique message. You know, we have a unique message in that we think many of our interventions overseas, arming al-Qaeda in Syria, were a mistake, and very few other people have taken that position. I also think the government went too far in collecting our phone records. People like Jeb Bush actually believe that was one of President Obama's finest moments, was collecting all our phone records. So there are, you know, is a place for us, not only in the party, but in the debate. And it's a significant, subset of the Republican Party, and maybe even a majority, that does believe that maybe intervention hasn't always been in our best interest.
So right now, in your full-time job, and that is being senator from Kentucky, there's going to be a major speech that you're going to be giving today. What's going to be the theme?
The theme is that a continuing resolution is continuing to add debt. It's a bad way to run your government. I won't support it. We need to use the power of the purse. Conservatives elected us to run the House and the Senate, and we're announcing defeat in advance, and we're capitulating to the president. And I would take a hard line. I would defund not only Planned Parenthood, but hundreds and hundreds of regulations, hundreds and hundreds of wasteful and duplicative programs. I would take them all out. I would put them on the table, and I would say, you know what, Democrats, it doesn't take 60 votes to defund something. It actually is going to take 60 votes to fund any of these programs. Vote on them one at a time, and we'll see how many of these crazy programs get 60 votes. My guess would be very few. But that would take the courage to put it up there and let the spending expire and then start anew with new programs that would all require 60 votes to pass.
Well, I mean, I don't think Senator Mitch McConnell is going to do that. And I know that the new speaker and the old speaker, the soon-to-be old speaker, are interested in keeping the government open. What's your message to them?
I'm not interested in continuing to spend money like crazy without reforming. I'm not interested in borrowing $1 million a minute. And I wasn't elected to preside and govern over the status quo. It's time somebody takes a stand. It's some time that someone tells, basically is honest with the American people, that we need to do something different than the Democrats, dramatically different. We need to challenge them. And maybe it is time to have a rumble. Maybe it is time to stand up and struggle with the Democrats over what should be spent and what shouldn't be spent by government.
Senator Ted Cruz got up yesterday and he was railing against the GOP leaders. Here's how his speech was accepted. Cut 40.
Mr. President, I move to table the McConnell Amendment 2690 for the purpose of offering my own amendment number 2701. And I ask for the yeas and nays.
Is there a sufficient second? Is there
a sufficient second? There does not appear to be.
So a lot of people view that was a clear snub, don't you think?
Well, you know, Ted has chosen to make this really personal and call people dishonest in leadership and call them names, which really goes against the decorum and also against the rules of the Senate. And as a consequence, he can't get anything done legislatively. He's pretty much done for and stifled. And it's really because of personal relationships or lack of personal relationships, and it is a problem. But I approach things a little different. I'm just as hardcore in saying what we're doing is wrong. I just don't choose to call people liars on the Senate floor, and it's just a matter of different perspectives on how best to get at the end result.
Would you say also Mitch McConnell has let you down at all because he is part of the leadership that does not, you know, his beliefs are not your beliefs when it comes to taking a hard stand on spending and on with the president?
You know, I think I would say we have disagreements on tactics on how to do it. And I stand up forcefully for what I think is right, but I try not to make it personal. So I will stand up. I stood up on the NSA. I stood up on Planned Parenthood. I forced a vote on Planned Parenthood in August. But I try not to make it personal. And I think in not making it personal and understanding that other people have different perspectives and that really this is a democratic republic, you've got to woo people and you can't hit them over the head. But I will give a forceful speech this morning on why what we're doing is wrong, why I will not support a continuing resolution, and why I think a continuing resolution is the status quo. And it just continues more of the same, more borrowing and spending, and I won't be part of it.
What is your? I know that's a different chamber, but you have Kevin McCarthy about to take over the House speakership. It looks like he's got the votes. He is for a continuing resolution. And here's what John Boehner said about those in 2013 that wanted to shut down the government over and maybe want to do it again. Cut 35.
The Bible says beware of false prophets. And there are people out there, you know, spreading noise about how much can get done. I mean, this whole idea that we're going to shut down the government to get rid of Obamacare in 2013, this plan never had a chance. A lot of my Republican colleagues who knew it was a fool's errand, really, they were getting all this pressure from home to do this. And so we got groups here in town, members of the House and Senate here in town, who whip people into a frenzy believing they can accomplish things that they know are never going to happen.
It sounds like the speaker might be describing the type of speech you're going to be giving today.
Yeah, but I think he mistakes what can be done and what can't be done. I'm not saying that we can get everything we want, but I'm saying don't start by saying we're not going to get anything. Right now, you know, people always talk about in foreign policy, negotiate from a position of strength. A position of strength would be that we defund Obamacare, we defund hundreds of regulations, we defund Planned Parenthood, and we put it out there, not with just Planned Parenthood being defunded, but hundreds and hundreds of offensive items that President Obama has put forward through executive action. We defund them all. That's our starting position. We put it out there, government spending expires, and then Democrats will have to come to us and negotiate what are the things that we can get 60 votes for. There are hundreds and hundreds of programs that are just crazy and ridiculous that should never have any money spent on, but in a continuing resolution, they continue on.
Right.
Give you one quick example. We spent $300,000 studying Japanese quail to see if they're more sexually promiscuous on cocaine. That's outrageous. That's an insult to taxpayers, and it ought to be stopped. But when you do a continuing resolution, it continues.
Senator Rand Paul, our guest. Senator, why is your attendance record, with you only missed three votes, so much better than Senator Marco Rubio? You're going for the same job, and you have the same job.
Well, you know, I get paid by the taxpayers, and I consider it an obligation to be here and to be doing my job. And so I try to make as many votes as humanly possible. I try to be part of the debate. And I just, you know, as my own personal perspective, I don't think it's right to miss the votes, if at all possible.
He says he hasn't missed any crucial votes.
I haven't looked at his voting record. I know he's missed about a third of the vote. So, you know, that he just has a different perspective on his obligations to the taxpayer.
All right. Let's talk about Syria, if we can. I think we're seeing an example of what happens when we do nothing or not enough. We have Russia fill the void. Does that make you rethink what you would have done in Syria?
I actually think there's two perspectives. I think you could argue, well, we didn't do enough, or you could argue, as I do, that actually we did too much. We put 600 tons of weapons in there in 2013, us, the Saudis, and the Qataris, but a lot of it went to the allies of al-Qaeda. And I predicted at that time, I said, the inevitable irony is that we'll be back fighting our own weapons. And that's kind of where we are now. None of these groups like America, none of these groups like Israel, and I frankly don't want to give weapons or arms to the allies of al-Qaeda. We recently spent $250 million training 70 fighters. We sent them back into Syria. within 10 minutes they were captured and gave their weapons up to an al-Qaeda affiliate. No, it's a mistake. Toppling Gaddafi was a mistake. Toppling Assad would be a mistake. Every time we've toppled a secular dictator, we've gotten chaos and the rise of radical Islam. So we need to target who our enemy is. We need to combat them. But I think being involved in some of these civil wars has actually backfired on us.
But when 250 million people are killed, don't you think America should do something? 250,000.
Well, we have been doing something, and I think.
But what would you do? But you didn't want to do anything. Do you think we're pouring gasoline on it?
Well, you know, there was a good op-ed written about a month ago, and it said that basically Saudi Arabia and Iran are like arsonists. They've been throwing gasoline on the fire in Syria on both sides of this. And really, I don't think it's helped. Look back at all of our interventions in the Middle East in the last 30 years. Every time we've toppled a secular strongman, we've gotten chaos and the rise of radical Islam. Some people in our country had a foolish notion that we would spread freedom and democracy and they would be just like us and want to be Jeffersonian Democrats. That's not really what they want. When we topple the secular dictator over there, we often get chaos, and maybe the majority actually votes for Sharia and votes for radical Islam. So I just think we've made some mistakes, and we shouldn't perpetuate it. Many wanted to bomb Assad. There are still Republicans who want to bomb Assad and Democrats who want to bomb Assad. And I think that's a mistake because actually Assad is an enemy of ISIS. He's not a good guy. I wouldn't ally with him, but I certainly wouldn't want to push him back so ISIS has room to grow.
Here's Vladimir Putin. Cut three.
We think it is an enormous mistake to refuse to cooperate with the Syrian government and its armed forces who are violently fighting terrorism face to face.
So you agree with Vladimir Putin?
Not necessarily, but I think that maybe a year or so ago when Assad was weaker, we had a better chance of actually probably having discussions with Russia and seeing if we could have gotten Assad to go into Russia. I still think there is a chance that Assad could be forced into asylum and out and a ceasefire could come about and that Russia might be part of those talks. That's why I said in the last presidential debate that I think Carly Fiorina had sort of a naive approach to foreign policy in the sense that she doesn't want to talk to Putin. Reagan, you know, one of our probably most popular recent Republicans, continued to talk to the communists, continued to talk to Gorbachev, and negotiated from a position of strength, but he did negotiate. So I think it's important not to close off the lines of communication. And even when Putin does bad things in one country, there's a possibility that he may cooperate in another. We did get rid of the chemical weapons in Syria. That was a step forward, and Putin was involved with that. I'm not glossing over the fact that Putin is an aggressor, but at the same time, he's not going away soon.
But the other thing is, Senator Paul, obviously Russia has gained. They now have a foothold. We know they're tighter with Iran than ever before. We know they have an intelligence nexus with Iraq, and they've always had it with Assad. But now all four are talking to each other, and now with even offensive operations. It doesn't bother you to lose influence in the Middle East?
No, but it does bother me. But I would see it as a consequence also of the Iraq war. Iraq is now one of Russia's closest allies. Iraq
it wasn't in 2012. It's because we pulled out.
Well, Iran is a close ally of Iraq because of the Iraq war. With Hussein gone, now it is run by Shiites, and they are closely aligned with not only with Iran, but with Syria as well. And they're all now in Russia's orbit. So you could make an argument that this is a consequence of the Iraq war, of destabilizing the region and dislodging Hussein.
Yeah, Syria and Iraq were cooperating. That's why a lot of material ended up in Syria with Saddam Hussein. So we'll see. Russia's influence is growing. They have control, really, of these negotiations. And I've never seen President Obama as frustrated not talking to Republicans as he was yesterday. So we'll see. It's going to be an interesting run. Senator Rand Paul, you in for the long haul?
Absolutely. We're organized in all 50 states, and we have 350 college campuses organized. Crowds are bigger at every turn, so all the talk otherwise is nonsense.
Senator Rand Paul, thanks so much. Best of luck with your speech at 10:30 today.
Thanks, Brian.